So, as I said this morning, this afternoon we have artists who they are here, and Greta Lowe, who are both artist curators who are working with Further Field over the summer and the autumn. And we're hoping you experience this morning as a kind of rich layer of layers and layers of things that actually sit together quite nicely. And now we have two examples of really rich practices that we hope will offer examples and amplify some of the themes that we looked at this morning. So it's going to be the same format. So Greta will talk for somewhere between 20 minutes and half an hour. Then they are here, we'll come and do the same, and then we'll have a discussion in which we'll take questions. Okay, thank you, Greta.
So the project that I'm going to be talking about is Networking the Unseen, which is an exhibition that is currently installed at the Further Field Gallery in Finsbury Park, and it was really an amazing experience working here. So thanks very much to Further Field for that and for the invitation. I think that there are quite a lot of connections between this project and what's been discussed this morning, but in case at any point those connections aren't quite clear, do feel free to ask questions. So I'm going to sort of start by saying that my individual artistic practice is based a lot around looking at the ways that digitalization impacts culture and the way that it brings about cultural change. And so I definitely approach that from a sort of interactive standpoint rather than thinking that either culture or technology is sort of leading the way there. I see that as an interaction. And a kind of a trend, I guess, that I noticed 6 years ago was the way that when we talk about digitalization and the digital network, it tends to kind of fall under one of two categories. Either there's this kind of demonizing rhetoric or this deifying rhetoric. So you could also say that it's utopian or dystopian. And I think that both of those sides of the same coin are based on this idea of, or it's a myth of an all-knowing, all-powerful digital network. And I think that myth is something that's perpetuated by the technological elite, really, as a marketing tool, as a kind of tool of control. And it helps them both to literally sell their products and sell their services, but it also, I think, functions to make us feel kind of helpless in the face of it, and as though it's some sort of inevitable kind of process, as opposed to something that we're all part of all the time. So that's really, I think, at the core of most of the work that I do, which is about trying to kind of deconstruct that network. And talk about how we can all deconstruct it and how it's already fragmented. Getting back to this idea of demonizing or deifying, two metaphors that we can use for that are the unplug movement on the one hand, which is a little bit later. It came about in this idea that if you've ever read a newspaper commentary article about the way that we all have so many Facebook friends, but we don't actually have any real friends anymore. And the way that, social media is destroying interpersonal communication, things like that. This kind of breeds this idea that the internet, social media are going to be the kind of shackles of our future enslavement, and that, it's really the end of the world, and it's really terrible, and we should all just unplug. But on the other hand, there are things, the most recent, perhaps big example of that was Arab Spring. And there are these narratives that were built up around that have now since kind of died a little bit, but they were built up around that sort of told us that social media was exactly the opposite. It was the thing that was going to help us re-democratize the world. It was going to put power back into the hands of the people. It was going to allow us to distribute all this information in such a free and sharing kind of way. And I think what Ruth was saying earlier about the blockchain, there's the same things happening now. And so, it's sort of, this is a narrative, or these two narratives kind of keep cropping up with each new technology. And I guess that just led me to have the thought, well, if that's the narrative, or those are the narratives that keep cropping up, you know, what is the common denominator is not the technology, but it's us. So I guess, you know, we need to kind of look beyond that. And so that's kind of where I started from, is this real frustration that there's, you know, that there's just such a lack of analysis that's looking at digitalization that goes beyond the Anglo-centric, that goes beyond, you know, the northern, western, mainstreams, urban, all these kinds of things, and the really tries to get beneath that to examine what the positive and negative impacts of digitalization really are. So what better place to do that than at the very edge of the network? And I think that, you know, I really want to stress that while I'm sitting here alone today, you know, there are other collaborators who are equally important in this, and they come from the Warniaka Art Centre, which I just wanted to mention a little bit about this, just so that you can kind of picture maybe what this place is, or where it is. So Warniaka Art Centre is a Walpuri Indigenous art centre that is based in Lajamanu, which is a Walpuri First Nations community about 900 kilometres south of Darwin. So it's really, if you imagine Uluru or the big, you know, the big red rock in Australia, if you imagine that being the kind of very centre of the country, Lajamanu is kind of halfway between that and Darwin. And it's a town that is so isolated that it's about a 650, 700 kilometre drive to the next town. So that means, you know, you're really travelling all day in a car to get from the nearest town to this town. And that is important because when we are sold these myths about the all-powerful digital network, it's based on the way the places in which those networks function the best. You know, we don't get told about you know, the places at the very edges of the networks and the kind of the fragmentation that happens with that. And I think there, you know, you have the links with glitch art and stuff like that, because you know, I'll get to that a little bit more later, but it's a political and very important, powerful strategy for deconstructing this idea that the network is, that firstly that there is one network, and secondly, even if there was, that it was sort of, you know, all powerful in some way. So what I want to do now is just show you a short video that should hopefully give you a little bit of an introduction into my collaboration with the Warniaka Art Centre. I'll just sort of talk over some of this. This is a documentation of a project that we've been working on for several years called Yamma, and that is probably the second big body of work that's come out of this collaboration. So it is really a long-standing relationship between myself and the Art Centre and various artists that I work with there. I visit there quite as frequently as I can. And there's also artists from Warniaka who come and stay with me in Europe, or we travel here, sometimes we work together. That's important because it's not a case of, you know, a kind of fleeting connection or a fleeting effort to create one surface or like one piece, but rather it really is for us both about an ongoing dialogue that really tries to look for new ways to look at questions that concern both of our cultures, and I think all cultures around the world. And something, you know, that the Walpuri do really, really well, I think, because because the kind of cultural change, the acceleration of that cultural change has been so dramatic, they are very good at looking at these new technologies and not sort of being impressed by the newness of them, but rather to kind of consider how they fit into the culture, what are the positives and negatives of them and things like that. But there are, and these are selfies. These are just images that people from the community have used. It's part of a database that I've helped the Art Centre set up, where they're actually collecting and archiving these little outsider digital art pieces, I guess. And they really, I think to me, they really illustrate extremely succinctly the problem with digital colonialism and the way that the digital can kind of, the forces behind it and the power hierarchies behind it can take us in one direction, but they equally, these same technologies can be used for cultural preservation, for social good, for intercultural exchange, and for educational purposes, you know. And that education is, on the one hand, from Walpuri adults to Walpuri children, but it's also from the Walpuri to us, or from Indigenous cultures to us, and from, you know, between us and other cultures and things like that. And I think that to me is something that I still find when I, you know, that is so missing from the way that we talk about in the West, that we talk about these new technologies. It's just, there's such a narrowness of focus. So if you take anything from my talk today, please take that message with you, that focus that we have, or the way that we look at digital technologies and the way that we try to understand them, needs to be much, much broader. This is a piece that's in the exhibition at Furtherfield right now. It's called The Phone Booth Project. It's by Curtis Taylor, who's a really amazing Matu filmmaker, young Matu filmmaker and artist, and Lily Hibbard, who's an Australian artist based mostly in Paris these days. And this piece was made up in the northwestern desert in Matu country. And what they did was to take one of the phone booths that are a real fixture and a kind of hub for communication within the Indigenous remote communities. And they made this phone booth free to use, as long with the understanding that when you were using it, you would be recorded. And they made from that this absolutely magical three-channel video and this installation that goes with it, that I think really kind of crystallizes the way that technology is so embedded in place, and the way that the physicality of the place determines how the technology is used, and also, you know, so then you have these three things. You have technology, culture, and place, which I guess relates to what Tim was sort of talking about as well, with the kind of the land aspect and the landscape aspect, which I think is really interesting to keep in mind. So again, you know, getting back to this idea of the narrowness of our focus, I think perhaps where I kind of started with my approach to the work with Waniaka, obviously they have their, my collaborators have their own reasons for being in that collaboration, but for me, one of the things that I was really interested in was having this sort of example I guess it's sort of like a reflection, but in the sense that I wanted to understand more how we relate to technology, and my background's actually in psychology, so I am really interested in the kind of the psychology behind how our relationship to technology, and also how that relationship might be changing our psychology. And so, but I think for us, these changes have happened so rapidly that it's hard for us to kind of get inside what that technology is and what that relationship is. It's so pervasive now that it's really quite hard for us to see that in our own culture, I think. And so for me, when I was spending time in La Germanu, I found that it was easier for me to reflect upon my own relationship with technology when seeing how other cultures grapple with those same issues. But the key is that the issues are the same. So technologically driven cultural change really is everywhere. And you know, there's a lot of research being done on it now, media studies and all of this kind of thing, but it's just, again and again, it's shocking to me how narrow the focus is in that body of scholarship, And I think that we really need to, if we want to understand what the network is and how it's affecting the world and how it's affecting art and culture, where it's taking us, all these kinds of things, we need to grapple with concepts like digital colonialism, techno-imperialism, and how these forces are changing the shape of communities around the world, not just within our own communities or the communities that are closest to us. So because it's really important to me not to always be the voice of this project, if I can help it, and we did a talk with a couple of Walpuri artists at Furtherfield, which was fantastic. But of course it's a bit further away for them to be here today than it is for me. So I'm going to just show a short video with Neil Japarula Cook, who's one of my main collaborators at the Art Centre, just so that hopefully he can kind of address some of the concerns more that come from his side of the collaboration. That's really such an important message. We share the knowledge. And Japarula talks there about technology that Aboriginal culture bears or has available to share, I think. And it really has just been so ignored by the rest of the world. And it's like a completely untapped resource. Like if we're talking about commons resources, This is like something that is available for us to benefit from, and that, you know, the people are at least in my experience, very willing to give. But as Japrula said, that's a two-way learning process that really has to happen. And there is nothing that can be learned from one party going to another party and saying, I'm here to help you. You know, it's just, it's really at the root, I think, of a lot of these problems. We need to be learning from each other and looking for a plurality of different approaches to deal with, possibly, especially because the network or the networks are so fragmented and so sort of complex, you know, that we really need to be looking at these things from a plurality of different ways and from diverse perspectives so that we can understand it more fully. So we've been talking about technology this and technology that, but what is technology? This is Steve Jumpajimpa Patrick, who's a Walpuri scholar and elder in Lajamanu, and he's really such an amazing resource and such an amazing speaker on these kinds of things. And this photo was taken on the opening night of our exhibition at Furtherfield, and he was being interviewed by the filmmaker who was doing a film documentation of the show. And he was talking about our installation called Yamma, which is looking at, Yamma is a Walpuri word for, I'm going to extremely simplify it, for reflection, which means not only the reflection that you see when you look into a pool of water, perhaps, but also the self-reflection that you, the process of self-reflection that you go through. And Jumpajimpa was talking about the exhibition and the installation and what it means, and the way that for the Walpuri artists, it was really about the collaboration was really a process to explore how culture remains unchanged by technology in a lot of ways, and the way that it is constant through technology. And when he was referring to the screens that we built into the installation at Furtherfield, he called it this so-called technology. And I think I almost did a jig on the spot because I just thought it was such a perfect description, because, you know, it really articulated something that I'd been struggling to articulate for a long time, which was this idea that the word technology has come to mean something that it was never intended to mean. You know, it has sort of become coupled to the neoliberalist sort of agenda, really. And what it actually means is that it's a sort of a tool. It's a tool with which we do something. So from a Walpuri point of view, that can be a horse, which didn't exist in that country before. It could be a car, it could be a gun, it could be a computer, it could be the internet. It could also be meditation, or the way that you learn to think about something. And I think that this idea is so powerful when we understand that technology is not just this computer or this microphone or that camera. Technology can also be the way that you think about those things. It is a process for understanding something. It is a tool that you use. So, And when you start to think about that and broadening up that definition, then you get into, then it becomes much more obvious that you can't just apply that to very specific things. You know, you can't just say, I need to learn to read words. You also need to learn to read the land, to read the bird calls, to read yourself, and to understand your own place in the world as well. So, when we talk, I think, and when I say we, I mean white culture, usually, academics especially, when we talk about diversity, and I think the word diversity is very problematic, and there are writers and sort of commentators on sort of racism and things like that, diversity, so-called diversity studies, who can dissect this term a lot better than I can. But what I think I want to say here is that when I'm talking about diversity, I'm not talking about it from a point of view of some sort of altruistic act or something like that. I'm talking about the fact that rejecting the lack of diversity is a political act, and it's a revolutionary act, especially in the digital networks, you know, which are supposed to be so diverse and plural and allow us to all kind of connect, but the main sort of forces that are shaping it at the moment, the proprietary forces, are not really allowing that to happen to the full extent. And I think that from that point of view, For me, at least at the moment, one of the ways that I feel I can make the most difference is by rejecting that lack of diversity and working to expand it in some way. And so one of the projects that's coming up next in our collaboration is this selfie app that we're working on. And so it's taking those little self-portraits that we saw from in the first video, and taking that interest in this kind of fun, trashy internet aesthetic, and using it as a kind of a way to subvert the normal relationship that's been developed with place and technology. And what I mean by that is that most apps and sort of tools that are used on digital devices, they come from one end of the world and they get sort of shot out, scattergun approach to the rest of the world. And so for me anyway, that's like really central to this project, is that we want to develop something in the desert that's for the desert people, and that it's about, that uses that cultural framework as its starting point, and that shoots that back out to the rest of the world. But for the artists that I'm working with, you know, they're going to use that same technology for different purposes. So for them, it's really important that, you know, we have the correct symbols for each skin group's dreaming, so that they can use that as a tool to teach young kids, for example, in a fun way about their cultural history and the information that they need to have to kind of, you know, be fully present in their culture. So, you know, I hope that this will be an example of something that can be used, the same technology that can be used in different ways by all the different kind of collaborators, and that forwards us all together, but in different ways. So again, what we're trying to do in these kinds of processes is take back control over the representation of communities online. So we're looking at bringing attention to communities who are continuously silenced and marginalized, even in a network world that, you know, supposedly is so omnipresent and has such kind of powerful abilities to sort of connect us up and create wormholes between these different communities. And even though that was part of the sort of utopian promise of the internet and social media, it's yet to kind of really eventuate. And I think that we, you know, we really need to look at ways to push that forwards. I'm going to leave you with this brilliant image by Jenny Fraser, who's a Murray artist and sort of screen-based cultural producer, which I just absolutely loved. I'll just give you a minute to have a look at it and think about it and yeah, if there's anybody's got any questions before we move on.
I've got one. Thank you very much for that. That's very interesting. To what extent would you say that technology as a branch and product of rational thinking is misconceived as white, northern, western man's domain? Isn't it this misconception that results in the lack of diversity in digital networks?
Yes. Yes. Couldn't say it better than that. But I think it is a perception, right? So we can change that. And I think for me, one of the best examples, and really big examples, you know, that kind of occurred to me quite recently is Twitter. You know, like, it was made by that establishment for the purpose of making money. That was why it was made. But it's kind of failing at that, but it's massively succeeding in other areas, which is, I mean, for me, Twitter is like really crucial to my ability to be able to educate myself on issues that are outside of my immediate sphere or frame of reference. And I think that Twitter, while it's not really making a lot of money, it is kind of the birthplace of some really important movements, digital feminism, Black Lives Matter. You know, these are kind of movements that are for real social good, even Occupy, you know, and they're kind of born there. And to me, that's an example of the way that even these tools that we are not given, but that are available to us, that might have been made for one purpose. It can be queered and used for something else, and that's what we should always be aiming to do, is to make it as weird as possible.
Any other questions?
Yeah, if we move on from, exists within digital colonialism or colonialism, whether it's digital or not, when you said the ways that we can learn from them, I was thinking, in what ways can we benefit from them without exploiting their cultural contexts? But does that matter to them?
I think... I mean, my personal experience with my collaborators has been that they are incredibly generous. So that's like the basis there. But also I think that as long as the interaction is respectful and that there's listening, I think that we also need to respect the agency of the people involved. So one of the really early works that we did together was a network performance that was called Is the Desert Still the Desert in a Digital World? And it was asking that question. Partially, maybe it was also me asking that question and thinking for what is my role as a white woman going into this community and kind of really bringing a lot of this digital stuff. I mean, it was already there, you know, but sort of introducing that in a very targeted way towards art making practices and things like that. But ultimately, I kind of came to the conclusion through dialogue that, you know, no culture is in a museum. No culture is kind of is fenced off. They're all cultures are always changing, including our own. And I think that the same question that I was trying to kind of unpack my obligation or responsibility in being involved in this collaboration, the same things really apply in my own culture and between other, you know, post-industrial cultures or whatever. So I think we have to respect the agency of the people involved to be able to just set their own boundaries. And there is very clear evidence of the Walpuri doing that. So, you know, there was a technology that was SMS message based that was allowing people to broadcast messages, and they found that it was leading to a lot of kind of bullying and teenagers and things like that. This was across the whole kind of Walpuri country, which is probably the size of England. And so the elders actually had meetings about it and decided that they didn't want to use it anymore and that was gone, because one of the main problems was that these messages were being sent anonymously. That was how they were broadcast. And so I think in that way as well, you know, in my experience with Walpuri culture and Indigenous culture has been that in a lot of cases there's a much deeper grounding in a sort of immutable ethical framework or positioning, which has a lot to do with land and body. From that point, then it's much easier for them maybe to make decisions about how they want to engage with different technologies or whether they want to use that and in how they're going to use it, you know. And the piece, one of Curtis Taylor's pieces in the show, is a kind of parable exactly about that. It's a moral story about how that he's, as a young Aboriginal man, is making four other younger Aboriginal children and teenagers about how they should engage with technology like Facebook and things like that in relation to cultural taboo and sacred sites and things like that. And it's an instructional video in a very artistic and beautiful way. But yeah, I think there's some really quite clear boundaries there.
Okay.